DSM presents The Tim Meisberg Show, streaming live on WBSM.com and the WBSM app. Call 508-996-0500. Send us app chat messages and open line voicemails using the WBSM app. Now, The Tim Meisberg Show.
And welcome back. Hour number three of the program here on Tuesday morning. And we have a special guest joining us for this this segment of the program. We have Danielle Brown, who is the program director. Is that your title?
Yes.
At Stepping Stone, Inc. And just really quickly, because I don't think we covered this when you were here before. What is Stepping Stone and how does it help?
Again, I want to just thank you for having me back on the show.
Sure. I'm just going to have you pull that microphone a little bit closer. There you go.
Okay. So Stepping Stone Incorporated goes back 50 years. It was formed in 1971. It was a nonprofit organization. It started for substance use disorders for men. And over the years, they have just transformed a lot of the services they do. So they have residential programs in Fall River for both men and women. And in New Bedford, they have residential program for women and children. And then they have mental health services, they have peer-related services, recovery coaching, and then comes the component that I do. We serve the unhoused population. In Fall River, they have a shelter, an outreach team, and supportive services. In New Bedford, they have the outreach team, which I oversee. We have a component that has funding from the city of New Bedford to provide outreach to those that are out in the unhoused in the streets that are homeless. We also have a grant that SAMHSA funded where we provide services to anybody who is unhoused or at risk of being unhoused who has a mental health disorder or a co-occurring disorder in the city of New Bedford or Fall River. So we provide complete wraparound services. Health insurance is not a requirement. So anybody can come into our office, or if we encounter them in the streets, we often go to the places they live in encampments. We just meet them on the street. We have conversation and we invite them in. And when individuals choose not to come in for services, we always go out and meet them. So wherever you want to meet us, we're going to meet you where you're at, because it's important to meet an individual right where they're at, not try to put our beliefs on them.
Well, and because that is kind of a misconception a lot of people have about the unhoused population, is that they're people who want a place but can't find one or can't get one. And a lot of times there are people who just choose that lifestyle.
And you're right. There are people who choose that, right? But I will say the percentage of those that choose it are much lesser than those that want a better lifestyle. And it's really hard because there's a lot of things asked of these individuals. And as it is, they have multiple barriers. So as I said, we serve a large population of those that are mental health. Years ago, I would probably agree with many people before I was educated and had the knowledge that I have today that these individuals might be individuals who had a substance use disorder, and they're really out there struggling. But you see more and more individuals have mental health disorders, untreated mental health disorders, or when they became unhoused due to current economics, right? Social classes. Individuals are now being evicted. They're going to the streets. Many families in the city of New Bedford are on the streets, sleeping in cars. It's not the look that many people had. Many people think of those that are unhoused as that dirty person on the street. You see them with a beer bottle, a liquor bottle, or they're on substances, right? We talk about all the behaviors of an individual. But usually, we're seeing more and more people are going to the streets, and then they're finding substances just to live on a daily basis. So this gives me a perfect opportunity to talk about a new initiative collaboration that's going to be happening with Stepping Stone, Mercy Meals and More, and Prairie Glen United Church. We are going to collaborate because there is a need for over 100 people in the city of New Bedford, right? The last year's point in time count counted 120 individuals, and we know that's a growing factor. Mm-hmm. So on Sunday, when there's services that aren't provided to our community, we're going to open the doors of Mercy Meals and More. And this gives an opportunity to provide individuals with nourishment, food, resources. But most importantly, what makes this gathering cafe, we're going to call it Safe Grounds Cafe, a unique opportunity is we're going to provide them with the resources, but also activities, life skills, get into the creativity of an individual, and let them know that we see them, we hear them, and that they're important. So this is going to begin this Sunday from 5 to 7 at 634 Purchase Street, Mercy Meals and More. I actually have a press release I will be giving you, and we're going to get this out. It's a great opportunity for those that are unhoused to come in, get warm, have coffee, and meet with individuals. This is going to be services with our community. There are a lot of volunteers that are providing their time and their skills to be able to help those that are unhoused.
And you mentioned, you know, being able to say that you see them and getting a chance to feel like a human again, because so many times when they're out on the street, they're just, you've either got people that are unintentionally belittling them, mm-hmm. because they feel bad for them, or people that are just outright ignoring them. And they say, you know, like they're standing right next to your car window when you're at the intersection and you're just going to look away and act like they're not even there, because for some people, they don't want to have to face the problem, or they're afraid that this person is going to come and bang on their window, whatever it is. And you lose sight of the person that's behind the situation.
I totally agree with that. And there is another misconception in that, because there are many people that stand on that street with that sign that are unhoused, and then there's the population that are housed, right? And they're seeking, because it's hard to live these days. Mm-hmm. But I will say, not taking that opportunity, that's the key there, to get to know the person that's standing there with the sign. You're not doing any justice, you know? I hear a lot of people talking about the problem. They come with solutions, but they're not coming with their time and their effort.
So with the people who are, as you said, over 100 people, they are going to be starting the point in time count tomorrow, right? Tomorrow night?
So it starts, kicks off tomorrow, Wednesday. We are going to have a soft opening to Safe Grounds. Actually, we're going to have Walt's Mobile Closet with us. We're going to have meals donated to us that we're going to provide to those unhoused. We're going to do the count there and the hopes to just kick off this event. And for a 24-hour period nationally, we go out in the community all over, and individuals count those that are outside. And I hate using "we count those that are outside." In New Bedford, the outreach team, my program, Project Fear, oversees the point in time count in New Bedford. So we will go out there. We will engage with those that we know in our community, have conversation, gather data, because that's the most important thing here, right? The data helps us to be able to provide services such as Safe Grounds. Another thing that we currently do is, because of data, it showed the amount of people on the streets, right? And this year there was funding that was released from the state of Massachusetts to be able to help those during the cold weather months. So Stepping Stone was able to get funding this year to provide safe shelter as an overflow to the overflow that Sister Rose has. And we provide motel rooms on cold nights to individuals, rather so they don't stay outside. But we found that with the beds that we have, according to our count last year, there was 120 people on the streets in New Bedford. I can say on any given night for the last month, we have had just exactly that. And we're turning away individuals and not having enough motel rooms to pay for them to go there. So it's data like the point in time count that we do for the 24-hour period that gets all taken into and it's looked at, right? They look at who's unduplicated because there are some that are sheltered and there are some that are unsheltered. And they look at that. They do a housing inventory count, right? That they look at how many individuals who are unhoused were put into permanent housing or other sources. And when they take this information, it allows for funding to happen, right? So again, this is national. So this is going up to the top. They're looking at what's homeless count nationally, and then they break it down to areas, and then that's how they're able to disperse the money. So this data and this count is very important so that we can get the services that we need within our communities.
I know there's been some question of the accuracy of this number because of the time of year that it happens, that, you know, you might have people that would normally be unhoused that just somehow on this particular night have found a place to be able to spend a warm night. So you're not necessarily getting everybody that's living out on the streets, and that maybe there's an opportunity to have another count later in the year when you might have more people outdoors. Is that what you see in reality, or is that kind of just something that only sounds good in theory?
So I will say it sounds good in theory. A few years back, we did exactly do that, right? But there are more and more individuals, they say in the warmer months because individuals out, but there are more and more individuals out in the warmer months because they choose to be out there, right? So that count isn't 100% accurate. We do see more individuals hanging out, but we do take that opportunity to talk to individuals. So again, the part of the New Bedford piece with the outreach team of New Bedford, we know the individuals, we encounter them. So we can separate if they're there for that night or not. We have conversation with them, but you're exactly right. So when an individual sleeps on somebody's couch and we're having that conversation with them, it disqualifies them from that count on that point in time count. And many individuals know that. So now more and more, they're choosing to stay outside on that night because they want to be counted in that point in time count. I know during the winter months, a lot of conversations had is, like I just said, we provide the cold weather shelter, right? During the winter months, they get counted as sheltered for that evening. So a lot of people look at, well, they're being counted as sheltered. I myself sometimes have those feelings. They're being counted as sheltered. But you know what? For that evening, they're safe inside and they're not outside. But it also goes to a sheltered count. So if somebody looks at the data and they break it down, we know the city of New Bedford has how many shelter beds. So if you take the shelter beds, you see how many the overflow has served and you see the great need for it. And that is gives us the ability to advocate for more shelter beds because we're showing we're filling those shelter beds. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a great opportunity to get involved, to have individuals, again, that you may know, encourage them to come to 634 Purchase Street tomorrow night between 5 and 7, we will be providing supplies. We have backpacks from Rise Up for Homes. Again, Walt's Mobile Closet will be providing some clothing, some basic necessities. Stepping Stone will be doing that. We will have meal, nourishment, and we can have those conversations. And we can provide them with the resources they need because every person matters in this count. If the individual is maybe listening and they may be from another area outside of New Bedford, there are teams that will be out in the community because we are now a regional effect. So I did say, and I did highlight, we are doing New Bedford, but the rest of our continuum is covering all other areas, Dartmouth, Fairhaven, Westport, Taunton, Attleboro. There is going to be outreach teams out there being able to count individuals.
And one of the things that has, you know, come up a lot in the last 4 years is a lot of people who have looked at the situation with undocumented migrants and said, you know, why are we taking care of these folks and not taking care of homeless people? And now we're starting to see, you know, for better or worse, we're starting to see these people who are being sent back to where they originally came from. And these hotel rooms and motel rooms are going to start to open up that they've been staying in. And now, is it plausible that we could be utilizing those same facilities to house the unhoused?
All I'm, I think this is opportunity to say, I'm glad when my great grandfather came over here, he wasn't just sent back to where he belonged. I can say many of us have, our families have migrated here. And once we were, our families were immigrants, right? These are people who have migrated here for a reason. So I really have a hard time with, we're wasting our money on migrants. That's not a vocabulary that I choose to speak. But I will say, even if that money was not there for them, you're going to have more and more people from the city, you know, utilizing these resources and putting them in housing. Again, there is always going to be the need for more hotel rooms. And just talk about that cost. Can we really talk about the cost of what it costs to house a person in a motel room? I think we should be advocating for a little bit more and look at our housing inventory and the shortage in the city of New Bedford. Stop pointing fingers and blaming individuals who are migrants or money being wasted on migrants, and take responsibility as individuals who live in our city. And
I'm saying, I just don't remember this overwhelming desire to help the homeless when there were no migration issues and the homeless people were still living on the street.
And, you know, I completely agree with you. I often say there is a lack of resources. There are a lot of great ideas. And again, I believe this is going to take a community to solve this problem. Okay. It's going to be a village. No one person in the city of New Bedford can solve the problem.
And they can't be treated as a political football either.
No. So I believe that we just truly need to look at this. Like let's take an opportunity. I just said there's over 100 people in this city in New Bedford. Again, you talked about driving by that person. What about stopping talking to that person and let's find a solution how we may help them? Instead of going to social media or giving all these great ideas, oh, well, this nursing home over there has been empty for how many months? Do you have the full story behind that nursing home? Why it's just sitting there? Who owns that? What may be happening? You know, there might have been service during a pandemic. You know, I remember when that pandemic happened, right? And everybody went inside. But I know I was out in that street giving back, you know. And it wasn't just because it's a job that I do. It's a desire that I've had for many years, right? So many people, let's come to the table and talk about solutions and how we may be able to help. Because removing migrants and putting our unhoused individuals in hotel rooms is not the solution. The solution is getting together as a community, having more conversations, having landlords come together, having funding resources come together and collaborate. Because again, it's not about you or I, it's about the individual that's on the street. How can we help them? A little bit of kindness goes a long way.
And, you know, not to make this overly political, but there's some concerns now because executive orders were signed where a pause was put on some of the funding that are going to programs. Is there any concern that this could trickle down and have an effect on being able to help the unhoused here in New Bedford?
It's a big concern for me. I said we're a SAMHSA-funded program, and programs and grants do happen. But again, when the government shuts down or programs are seized, then there causes a greater lack in the resources, right? We already have a lack in resources. So what happens at that time? Again, this is an action for our community to come together, because if they do stop, where are people going to go? We're talking about these motel rooms, right? I know there's great money that's owed back to the federal government. I've seen things like that happening. What are we going to do in those moments? Hotel rooms, motel rooms is not the complete solution. While we do that to keep a person safe and out of the streets, there are many families, there are many children, but we need a greater solution. And getting on social media and arguing about who should be doing what is not solving a problem. Getting to the table and coming together as collaboratives, talking about what we can do, not I, it's about them. Again, we need to say, we see you, we hear you, and we are here for you. Not, oh, this, you know, the same people that are saying, well, we need to do this, we need to do that. Then we're looking down on the individuals that just having a hard time, bad time on their luck. You know, I think I shared the last time I was on here. You know, many people look at me and light and they're like, wow, thank you. And, you know, all the work that I do, individuals who know me. But just a few months short ago, I was one of those individuals that did not have a place to call home. And I was couch surfing. You know, many people will say, well, you're not unhoused if you're couch surfing. No, I'm unhoused. I didn't have a place to call my own. I was sleeping from couch to couch. I had a vehicle filled with cars, clothing. That for me was not stability. And many individuals that are sleeping on a couch for a night because it's a safe place are unhoused. And it's important that we look at that.
And I was going to say, you know, I love staying in a motel room or a hotel room for a couple of nights, but I've also lived in one before and it's a vastly different experience. Between staying there for a few nights and having nowhere else to go but there.
Yeah, well, we need to talk about that. You know, what happens with these individuals that stay in the motel rooms? They're not living it up in the motel rooms. You know, daily they have to check in. We go to Sister Rose. It's a collaborative effort. We have come to work hand in hand with them so that we can make sure the shelter has the people to house. And then Stepping Stone meets there. And we do screening. We take individual. They get transportation to the motel room in Dartmouth. They get checked in, but there are rules they still need to follow, like a shelter. They can't have people in and out their rooms. They can't cook a meal. They can't do what they want in these rooms. It's just a safe place for them to sleep for the evening, and they're being woken up, you know, early in the morning. And, you know, I've been getting up. I've been going to there, and it breaks my heart on a cold morning when I have to knock on the door and I have to say it's time to get up because you have to check out by 7 a.m. and either get on transportation or take the bus where Mercy Meals is providing meals for the individuals. So, again, this is a great collaborative effort amongst multiple agencies and organizations to be able to provide services for those unhoused. But it's not they're getting a motel room and they're living their life up. It's completely not that.
And before we wrap things up, if people wanted to help out, if they wanted to be involved, how can they do so?
So I would suggest anybody can reach out to me. My name is Danielle Brown. I work for Stepping Stone Incorporated's Project Fair program. We are located at 888 Purchase Street, Suite 401. And the office number is 774-992-0655. You can contact me. We can have a conversation how you may help. And often also with our Safe Grounds Initiative, we will be launching volunteer app. So I will get that out in the community. Anybody can go on there and sign up to volunteer with their skills, their time, their resources, or can just even provide us with some basic necessities. Those are greatly appreciated.
All right. Well, thank you, Danielle, for joining us. And we're going to continue on with these conversations because this is a very important thing. And like you said, more than anything, it's about understanding who these people are.
Exactly.
It's a person. It's not a situation.
Exactly. Thank you, Tim, for having me here.
All right. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, we'll have the news with Phil. We will be right back.
Firings at the U.S. Justice Department, egg prices on the rise, and a popular soda's new flavor.
From the WBSM Newsroom, this is WBSM News.
The Justice Department has fired over a dozen career prosecutors who worked on criminal investigations of President Trump, citing a lack of trust in their ability to implement the administration's agenda. The move, effective immediately, targets those involved in Special Counsel Jack Smith's investigations and comes amid broader reshuffling within the department. Acting Attorney General James McHenry defended the decision as part of efforts to end what he called the weaponization of government. The firings follow Trump's sweeping clemency for over 1,500 supporters charged in the January 6th Capitol riot. It remains unclear how many prosecutors were affected or plan to challenge the dismissals. Hundreds of thousands of Palestinians returned to northern Gaza after a 15-month blockade was lifted. This comes as Israel confirmed that 8 hostages held by Hamas are dead. Joyous crowds returned to their homes despite widespread destruction. The fragile ceasefire faces challenges, including a dispute over hostage releases. Israel and Hamas have agreed on a revised schedule, with the next phase of releases set for Thursday. Egg prices are skyrocketing due to a widespread bird flu outbreak. Millions of chickens have been culled, leading to severe supply shortages. The USDA predicts prices will climb another 20% this year. Consumers are facing empty shelves and paying significantly more, especially for organic and cage-free options. The outbreak proving difficult to contain, affecting not only egg production, but also the poultry and dairy industries. Farmers now implementing strict biosecurity measures, but the threat remains. An Indiana man who was just pardoned by President Trump for his role in the 2021 Capitol riot was fatally shot during a traffic stop. 42-year-old Matthew Huddle was killed Sunday by a sheriff's deputy during an altercation. Authorities said Huddle was armed at the time, but did not reveal what led to the stop. Huddle had been sentenced in 2023 for entering the Capitol during the January 6th riot and served 6 months in custody. The Alaska House has voted to urge President Trump to reconsider his decision to revert the name of North America's tallest peak back to Mount McKinley. The resolution, sponsored by a Democratic representative, emphasizes the historical and cultural significance of the indigenous name Denali, meaning the high one. Republican lawmakers attempted to attach an amendment expressing support for other Trump administration policies, which was ultimately unsuccessful. The vote comes despite ongoing efforts to change the name. And Coca-Cola is launching a new flavor, Orange Cream. The soda, blending cola with orange and vanilla, will hit shelves on February 10th in the U.S. and Canada. Follows the short-lived Coca-Cola Spiced, which was discontinued last year. The company's experimenting with new flavors to keep customers engaged, recognizing the need for faster innovation in today's market. Orange Cream will be available in regular and zero sugar varieties and is expected to remain on shelves until at least early 2026.
WBSM Sports.
The Boston Celtics lost to the Houston Rockets last night. The score 114-112. Home at TD Garden to play the Chicago Bulls on Wednesday night. And the Boston Bruins on the road. They hit the ice with the Buffalo Sabres tonight at 7.
Now your ABC 6 South Coast forecast.
Partly cloudy and windy for your Tuesday, a high of 36 degrees. On Wednesday, mostly cloudy, light snow possible, a high of 38. On Thursday, partly cloudy and a high of 30. And on Friday, mostly cloudy, warming up with a high of 41. This WBSM News Update is brought to you by Stevie's Wine and Spirits. Look for the purple dot to try before you buy. Only at Stevie's Wine and Spirits in Fairhaven. I'm Phil Devitt for WBSM News. Stay up to date with New Bedford's news talk station, WBSM, and get all of our content and breaking news alerts with the WBSM app.
Know this because here I come with some more useless music trivia that you didn't need to know. But the background singer in that, so that of course is the Wallflowers, which is fronted by Jacob Dylan, who is the son of Bob Dylan, who's getting a lot of attention these days with the new movie out about his life. Although it's, you know, not exactly historically accurate, but then again, neither is Bob Dylan's life. I mean, he's always kind of made up different stories about things. He likes to keep the mystery going. In fact, you know, his name's not even Bob Dylan. But the Wallflowers are also out touring again, too. But in the background there, the lead singing is Jacob Dylan, but the background is Adam Duritz of Counting Crows. And the story that I'd always heard is that they were, you know, working in studios side by side and said, why don't you come in and sing? It's kind of a similar story to how John Popper ended up on What Would You Say by Dave Matthews Band. That's John Popper playing the harmonica in that song. So a lot of what the kids call collabs today, They're like, oh, did you hear that new collab? It's like, no, it's not a collab. It's just somebody else is on your song. It's not a collab. It's just guest person on the song. You don't have to make it a thing. But anyway, 508-996-0500. Fascinating conversation, as always, with Danielle Brown, as we're trying to, you know, make sure that we are putting a human face on the homeless problem. And it will be interesting to see if there is a shift in how people feel about the unhoused when it was a forgotten thing. It was something that people turned a blind eye to until it became a political talking point. I don't remember people saying, you know, why don't we put unhoused people into motel rooms and hotel rooms? I don't remember them saying that before they started doing that with migrants. So this became something that, you know, they were utilizing the homeless, the unhoused, as a way to push their own agenda. Like kind of the same way how people didn't care about whales until they started putting offshore wind turbines out in the ocean. They didn't care about the fact that these whales have been dying for years before that. They didn't care about the fact that NOAA and other IFAW and other organizations that track whale deaths couldn't figure out what was killing these whales before there was even work being done for offshore wind. But all of a sudden now there's wind turbines out there. It must be those. So you got to kind of do the homework on some of these things before you use them as your political football. 508-996-0500. Good morning. You're next on WBSM.
Good morning, Tim.
How are you?
Thanks for having that guest on in the past half hour. I was going to call in during your program on that while she was there, but she was so rapid fire with many things to get across that I didn't want to interrupt. I thought you had said she was going to be there for the hour, but she left a phone number if I want to call for more information. My interest is I've been an advocate for the homeless since 86 and was a member of two nonprofit organizations and a volunteer. Nobody was paid. So I've seen a lot of suffering on the street. I would have interjected that following the national news for many years and listening to professional reports and investigations of the homeless, that I think it's necessary to point out that current statistics indicate that maybe 20% of the homeless are using drugs, and that about half of them who are using drugs didn't start using them until they became homeless and they needed to self-medicate to kill the awful pain of being homeless there. So I don't want the public to have the misconception that, you know, the homeless are largely drug users. That would be untrue. But I want to thank you for having her on the program. And did I hear in her rapid fire delivery that she herself was once homeless?
Yes. There was a podcast of her last appearance where she talked a little bit more in depth about it. But yes, that's part of her life experience, but also part of her motivations to wanting to help people.
Now, would she have stayed for the second part of this hour answer questions?
I had just told her we would be on till 8:30 because I usually I'm not, you know, Chris McCarthy's show is a little bit different. So he can have guests for the entire hour. Being a morning show and people kind of coming in and out, you know, it's been the format of this show to have people on for, you know, no more than 20, 25 minutes at a time. But maybe we can have her come on for an hour next time she comes in.
Well, we need plenty of coverage of the situation, but I would have had a lot of questions to ask her about. For example, what does she really know about the death count of people who have died in Massachusetts from hypothermia, which is freezing to death. I believe I called you last week and said in Rhode Island they know 37 people froze to death on the streets last year. Where's the homeless count in that area? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And how many people have frostbite, amputations, medical conditions, even when they're housed afterwards, if they're lucky enough, how many people have ongoing medical disabilities as a result of being unhoused?
Right.
So there's a lot of questions that need to be answered. And she was just one thing after the other. All good information, but no room really to stop her flow with a call about various issues like death count.
Well, we'll see if we can get her to stay a little bit longer next time. Thank you so much for the call.
And thank you for putting her on.
Have a great day.
You too.
And let's take another call here, 508-996-0500. Good morning. You're next on WBSM.
Yes, good morning, Tim. I wanted to talk about the homeless situation and the drug addiction crisis we have in this country. And I believe that the pharmaceutical industry is directly responsible, going back to when they were putting out the OxyContins and all this. And when you're dealing with opioids, they are extremely addicting. And I've heard reports that there's as many or the majority of the addicted people in this country started out on properly prescribed prescription medications. The insurance ran out, and they had the addiction. And
in some cases, it wasn't even necessarily that the insurance ran out. Sometimes it's just the doctor was like, "Hey, like you've got to step back on this." Especially as we started to realize the addictiveness of this, and doctors became more careful of how they prescribed it, they would kind of cut it down. So people would just go and look for another way to chase that same feeling without being able to get it pharmaceutically.
Oh yeah, but it all started out from the pharmaceutical industry. I remember being in doctor's offices, seeing these med reps pull up these people were making big money, pulling up in brand, Beamer SUVs, mm-hmm. decked to the nines, making $400,000 a year, selling prescription medication to the doctors, who then when you go in, now you go in for a physical or what have you, all of a sudden, we got to put you on something, you know? And they have created this over-medication of society. And I think that the pharmaceutical industry, much like the tobacco industry, should have responsibility here, and they should have to foot that bill.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're starting to see these pharmaceutical companies be held responsible, but just not responsible enough.
Correct. You know, I mean, that guy, look at that Luigi Mangione or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
He killed that pharmaceutical guy there. I mean, I'm not advocating that. But what I'm saying is it shows that, the people in this country have had enough with these big pharmaceutical industries. And look what now it's coming out on the COVID, where that did start in a lab. And, That is, I suspect it may have even been a biological attack on the United States of America, but I can't prove that, and China's not going to let you in there. But I think we need to open our eyes. We're too naive in this country, and we're too willing to give everybody the benefit of the doubt when they don't deserve it. And the pharmaceutical industries don't deserve it, and they need to be held accountable, just like the tobacco industry.
I mean, we're now holding people responsible who sell people a fatal overdose of drugs. If somebody overdoses and dies, we're holding the dealer responsible for their death. We should be doing the same thing for the people that were manufacturing the drugs.
Of course. And not only that, I mean, it's about time, but I've thought that for years. But I mean, I've seen this, and now you got with the fentanyl. Anyone that's a fentanyl dealer, that guy should get life in prison. or the death penalty, you know, because he's knowingly poisoning someone.
I mean, I wouldn't advocate it for somebody who, you know, if it's because somebody didn't use things responsibly, and, you know, then that responsibility does fall on them. But it was different when it came to things like OxyContin, because they knew exactly what they were doing. And you watch these documentaries that have come out since, it was all about money. And it was, you know, no regard at all for the human life that was involved.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the dentist, I mean, I remember going to a dentist and he gave me OxyContin and he gave me Percocets. And I didn't even take them. I'm not going to take that crap. I took ibuprofen there and I was fine. I didn't need any of that stuff. But I had knowledge of opioids and refused to take any of that stuff. But I, you know, that's another thing. These doctors were overly prescribing this because they were making money on it.
Yeah. There's a lot of fault to be held all around. I got to hold you there just because I got to take a break. But thank you for the call.
All right. Thank you.
And I got to take this quick break and we'll be back in just a few moments. 508-996-0500.
Wanted to hear, spin them around like a wheel on fire, walking on tightrope and love's highway. Fatal attraction is where I'm at, there's no escaping me. I'm lying in the midnight hour, holding you just like a dream.
All right, welcome back in. A little Maxi Priest there for you. Fantastic song. 508-996-0500. App chat, open line voicemails on the WBSM app. Also, if you have the WBSM app, or if you go to our website, you can vote to determine which pet and pet owner look the most alike. And I'm watching, even as the show is on this morning, watching the votes come in, and it's getting closer and closer. And as I already mentioned a couple times yesterday, I saw whoever was in first place kind of flip. And now we've got Sam and Christine from New Bedford who have been holding on to the number one spot all morning. But it's close. Bentley and Colleen from Dartmouth are closing in. And, of course, there's a number of other great photos there. We took our top 10. We put them on the WBSM website and on the app. And you can check it out and vote for which pet and pet owner you think look the most alike. And the winner is going to get a $250 gift card. And it's all brought to you by Wareham Animal Hospital. And we're going to have other fun contests coming up as well. I think we've got one of these planned pretty much every month with different themes and different ideas. So you'll be able to submit photos. And who knows, maybe we have one that is perfect for you to enter to win. But also, make sure that you, if you do vote, let everybody else know, too, that they can vote, too. Spread it around. Let people know. Get them to vote because, you know, we want to make sure we get a big number of voters to help determine. The more people that vote, the more confident you can feel in their choice, except for when it's the presidential election, I guess. I said that just to make Chris McCarthy laugh. Don't call in all angry. I just knew Chris would laugh at that. Calm down. Also, we had mentioned yesterday that February is National Hot Breakfast Month. And as such, and also knowing the challenges that a lot of local restaurants are facing with rising costs and difficulty in getting eggs, it's going to be hard for people to make breakfast without eggs, right? So we are going to try to focus on some of those breakfast restaurants in the month of February with some Seize the Deals that we'll be putting on for you. And of course, you can always check seizethedeal.com every day for different great deals. I'll tell you about some of those in just a moment. But we also want to get out there and do the show from some of these breakfast places and focus on them. So if you know one that you think we should go and visit, send me an email, tim@wbsm.com, or send me an app chat message and suggest it. Or maybe you own a breakfast restaurant and you want us to come out and broadcast. Then reach out to me. We can set that up. Because we want to make sure that we are putting the spotlight on these breakfast places throughout February. And I have said, you know, normally when it comes time to go out and do the show in other places, because I've got so much that goes on here. My, you know, usually I'm like maybe one or two a month I could do. But in this case, I've said, open up the floodgates. Every place that wants me to go, with the exception of just a couple of days where it's hard for me to go there the day before and set up, which is what's required. You know, send me to everyone. Everyone that wants to have me. Let's do as many of these as we can. And you never know. Maybe, just maybe, I might pop into the kitchen and cook a few orders for them and get it out of my system. Because it's been a while. Although it hasn't really been that while. It hasn't been that long since I actually cooked breakfast, because I have dreams about it every freaking night. I'm still having dreams that I'm behind the grill, buried under slips. I have not cooked in 8 years, but it doesn't stop me from having the dreams every night. All right, I've got to take a break. Our final break of the hour. We'll be right back. All right, that's going to do it for me for today. Stay tuned for Chris McCarthy and South Coast Now. Then, of course, we'll have Bill O'Reilly followed by Barry.